been on that side of the table. I've not been a developer. I'm just.
I agree.
No, I think that's the purpose in revisiting it every year, to see what's changed, what's out there, what's occurred under this program.
The response there from Summit County Council Chairwoman Kim Carson. Claudia McMullen said she's always been uncomfortable with the language, saying that existing approvals should be significantly exhausted. She cast her vote in favor with reservation. KPCW News Time now, 8:16, and in the studio with me, I've got Summit County Council Member Roger Armstrong. Good morning, Roger.
Good morning, Leslie. How are you?
Doing well, thank you. Thanks for being here. Sure. So let's talk about the approval for the second phase of the general plan. Explain how you came up with the language in this entitlement paragraph. I mean, what's your idea of an important countervailing need?
Workforce housing, a transportation center. We know that to solve transportation in the basin, we're going to have to find a place to park people outside of the basin, outside of Quinns, outside of Kimball Junction. And finding land to do that is going to be a challenge. And whatever land may come up may not be properly zoned for that. So that could be something that we have to look at. And we can't be, as a county, it's hard to be self-serving and tell everybody else you can't. So we have to look carefully at the language to make sure that it doesn't just, as a blanket, forestall every possible need we might have. And that was the concern that we had with the original language proposed by the Planning Commission that essentially said no more new entitlements until existing density has been exhausted. And I felt, I raised that at the last meeting and said, I articulated my concerns, and Pat came back with some language that went a little beyond what I was concerned about. So the real concern was, how do we craft language that gives voice to what we hear from our community? We don't want more growth. We've got enough. You've got enough permitted density. But still allows flexibility if something remarkable is needed and an opportunity arises.
Yeah, so why not specifically shout out affordable housing and transportation in that? And the reason I ask is because, I mean, if we're going to talk about important needs, I mean, we've talked about this before. Developers certainly think their projects are needed.
Sure, I agree with that. And that's partially the reason that the language was crafted the way it was, because developers will come to you and tell you what great community benefits they're providing. And we didn't want to allow the developers to take charge of that discussion. The community need is best identified by the community and its elected officials. So that's how we crafted it. Again, being specific as to every possible need today is short-sighted. It's hard for us to do that. By tying it to the general plan, we can, if we do a housing study and it turns out we're 1,000 units of workforce housing short, I'm making it up, then we can add that to the general plan. We can have public hearings so that the public can comment on that. We can then say this is an articulated need for the county. If we need a transportation center, perhaps we need a water treatment plant someplace. Maybe we need a sewer plant someplace or some sort of water pumping facility. It's difficult to identify every specific need in advance. So the language is intended to be scalable, to adapt as we need something, as we go through the process of adding it to the general plan with the input from the community.
Yeah, but certainly we have seen this before, the whole NIMBY syndrome where people don't want affordable housing in their backyard. So they're going to come out against it. And then how is it that we know what the community need is?
They might. I actually have a little bit more faith in the community than that, because I think as part of the discussions that we have, workforce housing comes up. And I think generally our community understands that transportation problems that we have, traffic problems that we have, require us to do a little bit better with workforce housing. With the Silver Creek Village development coming in, we're going to get 330 new units with that. So that's a good benefit. It's going to take some time to get there. We really haven't done this study recently, but I have more faith in the community than that when it comes to workforce housing.
You're an attorney by trade. Do you think this language is legally tight?
It's pretty good. I came up with broad conceptual language, and then Dave Thomas artfully crafted it so it was a little bit tighter. And Robert Hilder added his pieces into it to make sure it's good. So I think we can rely on the county attorney. Claudia was concerned about when existing density is significantly exhausted. What does significantly exhausted means? Happy to have that discussion down the road when we start approaching something that feels like significant exhaustion, but we're nowhere near that now.
Yeah, you also heard again from a number of folks from Jeremy Ranch. What prompted their concern? I mean, where is that coming from?
I think it was a misunderstanding. And, you know, I want to first say the fact there are two issues that we dealt with this week. One was the general plan. The other is whether or not to include that land in the Mountain Accord study. And we received many emails. I would be guessing that on the Jeremy Ranch side, we probably had close to 100 emails. And, you know, with the federal lands designation, we had at least that many. So there were obviously groups that were reaching out to the community saying, there's something important going on, please engage. I love that. I like it when residents show up. That's important. That's when we do our best work because we get input. But it's only great when they're getting accurate information. And in this case, I think what was communicated to them was inaccurate. We haven't heard from the developer of that Jeremy Center property in a long time, I think since 2013. It's not a discussion we've been having, but that was communicated to the residents that it was on the boards with us that we were inclined to grant additional density up to 220-some thousand square feet, and that we were going to change 2.3 in the general plan to reflect that there would be this limitation on additional entitlements unless there was a desire for new entitlements. And it was nothing that we were contemplating. So I think we straightened it out last night. And the one thing I suggested is if residents have a concern, touch base with the county. We're there. We want to be transparent. We want to provide good service. So reach out.
So we hear that the general plan will have an annual review. How do we avoid the trap where the annual review takes a year and a half to do?
Well, right now we've got Pat Putt, and I trust that he's diligent enough to make sure that gets done. But I think it's up to us. It's up to the planning department. It's up to Tom Fisher to monitor where we are and make sure that we schedule that and start the process.
All right. How long is it going to take Pat Putt and the Snyderville Planning Commission to get that development code done?
I don't know the answer, Pat. I asked Pat last night whether we would have a big disconnect between the new general plan and the existing development code. He doesn't seem to think that there are significant disconnects. I know it's something that they want to start on right away, and I don't want to presuppose their schedule, but I know it's important to him to get it done.
All right. Well, regarding the Mountain Accord proposal to preserve the Park City Ridgeline, you agreed with the audience sentiment yesterday. You remarked that as a fisherman yourself, sometimes it's tough to find places to recreate that aren't private property, huh?
We have a lot of private land here. And, you know, in the fisheries area, a lot of that private land is closed. Some of the conservation agencies in the state of Utah have been able to convince some landowners to provide access so that fishermen can get on the river, but without that, there would be very few waters, especially in our area, that are fishable. And I did. Some of the comments that I heard in terms of accessing those backcountry areas, I'm not a backcountry skier. I'm a recreational skier. I don't have the skills to do that, but I respect that people do want to do it. And with lift tickets being in the hundreds of dollars now to, you know, go on a mountain, if that's the only access, that makes it difficult. And preserving those areas seems to be important. You look at Jupiter Bowls, you look at McConkie's, those are areas that a lot of people that perhaps can't afford lift tickets might like to ski, and they can't because it's privatized. And now we're looking at, you know, Murdoch Peak and some of the bowls behind the ridge, and it seems important.
Yeah, you suggested perhaps tongue-in-cheek that maybe 10 other people beside the resort folks oppose the idea. Does council's position affect now the relationship with the resorts?
I hope not. We have a good relationship with the resorts, and we've had a lot of discussions. This is a long process. The resorts are going to have the opportunity to comment on the NEPA process. They've got very good relationships with Washington, D.C. and the state, I'm sure. And if they want to try and carve something out or make some kind of a deal, I'm sure that they can find a way. So I don't think so. We're working with the resorts on a variety of issues, and I think we have a good relationship with them.
Yeah. You know, I mean, three different scenarios have been presented as part of this accord in terms of making connections between the Wasatch Front and the Wasatch Front. And it's like looking at them, Park City and Summit County have basically shut down all three. Park City certainly doesn't want 224 improved. The tunnel is now off the table, and with this trade of open space, ski lift proposal is also done. So, I mean, you haven't left yourself any options here.
Well, I think we have left ourselves options. There's still the study of the 224, 248 I-80 corridors and how we can improve that experience. I-80 is, it's odd because it's a low priority if you look at it as the density of traffic, how long it takes to get from Salt Lake City to Park City, because you can make that trip fairly quickly. The problem is we want to cut down on the number of cars coming here. So finding a mass means of moving people from the city to our area, getting them then onto our transit, that's where the magic is going to happen, and that's where we have to make that happen. And I think we have a lot of room to improve what we have without doing the kinds of connections that I think, you know, a tunnel connection could hurt business. It could result in massive new growth. We heard in the What's Next presentation on Monday night that Envision Utah thinks that Valley residents are going to start looking at this as an alternative place to live. And if we provide an easy train in and out of here, I think it becomes an easier commute for them, and we have greater problems. So there are a lot of reasons not to do that.
All right. And finally, did you go ahead and approve the recommended restaurant and wrap grants?
We did. One of my favorite days.
Okay. Anything else you wanted to mention?
That's it. Thank you.
Thank you. That's Summit County Council Member Roger Armstrong. 8:28 now. Good morning. I'm Leslie Thatcher. This is the Local News Hour on KPCW. Well, Deer Valley opens for the summer season this weekend. In the studio with details, Communications Manager Emily Summers. Good morning.
Good morning.
Got the perfect name for summertime.
For this season, yeah.
So opening for what? Lift, surf, biking and hiking, as well as one of the restaurants?
Yeah, so the lift starts spinning tomorrow, and that will be lift serve biking, hiking, scenic chairlift rides. And then Royal Street Cafe reopens for lunch operations through, and this is daily through Labor Day.
Okay. So what lifts are we going to have available and open?
So from Snow Park, it's the Silver Lake Express. From Silver Lake, it's Sterling Express. And then up at Empire, it's Ruby Express.
Okay, and we opened Ruby to provide transit from the Montage, huh?
Yeah, we've been running that for about 3 or 4 summers now, but yeah, just to open another base area, and we're really excited. We've been working hard on a lot of trail improvements and developments, and we've enlisted the help of Gravity Logic, and they're known in the bike industry as kind of being the best developer in the industry. We worked with them last year to kind of go over some plans, and they've been here since spring, and we're working on a lot of trail redesigns and then a new intermediate flow trail that'll open in phases from the top of Bald Mountain. And so you'll see, our guests will see a lot of changes starting tomorrow, but then again throughout the summer.
Okay, so let's talk a little bit. I mean, what's a flow trail?
So using that gravity, a lot less pedaling. It's a more of an intermediate style. There'll be jumps, berms, banks, you know. So as an intermediate rider, those jumps are kind of optional. But as an expert rider, you're going to have an option for about 50 jumps throughout this trail. And just to kind of eliminate that pedaling to flow with the gravity throughout the mountain.
Okay. So there is an option for people who don't need the reckless
air. Yeah, I won't
air.
Be jumping, but it's definitely something an intermediate biker could ride.
Okay. And that takes you from what, the top of Bald Mountain to Silver Lake? Or?
Yep. And it will open in phases, so just the beginning will be open in the start of the season, and the trail is expected to be finished in August.
Okay, so that it'll connect into what other trail then? Or it'll merge
down
with something?
Down to Silver Lake, yeah.
Okay. Mm-hmm. But it's, since it's not all built, I mean, it has to merge with something, right?
Right, I believe it's Nail Driver,
okay.
But I'm not sure where it's finished to at this point.
Okay, and so besides the one flow, what else are you doing?
So we rebuilt Nail Driver Trail, which is a popular one on Bald Mountain as well. And then we are extending Mid Mountain Trail. We're working with Mountain Trails Foundation. And Mid Mountain starts at Silver Lake currently, but we're going to extend that with the help of Mountain Trails Foundation down to the Snow Park area.
Oh, okay. Mm-hmm. And then that'll go, let me see, because the terminus there is at Silver Lake.
Mm-hmm. Yep, and so the goal is to get it down into kind of the Snow Park Lodge, St. Regis, Deer Crest area.
All right. So you would connect into like Finns or something else there. Okay. So prices then for lift passes?
So they're all on deervalley.com and they vary to which lifts you want to ride. If you want to ride all day, if you want to do a bike pass for one lift or all three lifts, and there's hiking prices as well. If you do hike up the mountain, you can ride down the lift for free. So a little reward for your hard work. But again, they're all listed at deervalley.com.
All right. And then what about your season pass holders from last winter? Do they ride for free this summer?
You can get your winter pass validated for summer. Just come on into our ticket office and they'll get you all set up. But yes, it is valid for summer.
All right. Is there a fee to that?
No.
No. Okay. Mm-hmm. What else is going on?
So many of you were probably at the concert, the first concert of the season last night. So the amphitheater is up and running and our Main season starts on June 30th with the Park City Institute series, the Big Stars Bright Nights, with Toad and the Wet Sprocket, and then the Deer Valley Music Festival starts on July 4th with the Utah Symphony, and they'll be in the venue every Friday and Saturday to about middle of August with that festival. So that's a big, big event for us.
Okay. And then in terms of eating on eating there, it's basically Royal Street Cafe for the summer?
And Deer Valley Grocery Cafe. And then we also have a dinner operation, the Brass Tag, which is in the lodges. And those are both open daily.
Okay. Anything else?
Nope. Just come up and enjoy the Deer Valley summer.
All right. Emily, thanks for coming by.
Thank you.
It's Emily Summers with Deer Valley Resort. KPCW News Time now, 8:34. Good morning. Well, the 1,200 members of the Women's Giving Fund have been sent links to vote for their top the three top choices for the first annual Women's Giving Fund grant. In the studio with details, I have Katie Wright, Lauren Vitulli, and Kristen Shaw from the Park City Community Foundation. Good morning.
Good morning, Leslie.
Good morning, Leslie.
Hi, Leslie.
So, Katie, how much money do you have to give away?
We are giving a grant of $30,000 this year, which we're very excited about. And one of the things I think we're most excited about is that we do feel that all the finalists, regardless of the final outcome of the vote, will be successful in raising more money and connecting with donors and supporters and volunteers through this process. So it's been wonderful so far, and we're really excited for the final event.
Yeah, so with $1.2 million at least, I mean, that's now in an endowment, and just do you expect to raise more than $30,000 in years to come?
Yeah, we do. So, you know, there was some upfront costs, like credit card fees and things like that, that we had to take into account. And then, as you know, we tried to make it really accessible. So we had many people paying on a monthly basis. So although we reached our goal of 1,200 members quite a while ago, we're still seeing the funds come in and grow. So we want to make sure that those funds are there in perpetuity. But of course, you know, people can become members at any time. We had a newborn join the other day. And so we first see that it will grow over time.
Great. So Kristen, how many applicants did you have for the money?
So we had 14 organizations apply, and the criteria was they had to support programs for women and children. From that, our amazing committee of seven women, including a high school senior, Molly Levins, vetted those organizations, narrowed it down to six. We did site visits with all six and determined the top three. And now it's up to all the Women's Giving Fund members to watch the three amazing videos and to vote. And the top three are Park City Tots, a new organization supporting affordable daycare, Summit County Children's Justice Center, a program to help children navigate the legal system when they've had traumatic experiences, and Peace House, which is doing a very innovative program, a peer support group where women who've actually had those experiences can support women going through the process. So right now, we're in the voting process. The deadline is Monday, June 22nd at 5 p.m., we're hoping that we get close to 50% of all members voting. So if you haven't voted, please do so before the deadline. I think everybody who's part of it has really enjoyed watching the videos and learning more about these organizations.
Yeah, so you sent out the links to the members. So if they didn't receive them, they should let you know.
And it's on our website as well, the video links. So anybody can watch it, not just Women's Giving Fund members.
So what was the committee looking for, do you think?
You know, I think it was a variety of a high-impact grant. We had developed the criteria in the last year, a program that was sustainable, so that could be continued into the future. Obviously, things like education, quality of life, just basic needs and things that may not be addressed in our community, but they exist. And so I think just taking a good look at what these programs are, and a couple are new, so just being open to what these organizations are doing. These are all three very well-established organizations in our community doing amazing work.
So the voting's been available for a while. What kind of turnout are you seeing so far? Any idea?
It's been terrific. Over half of the Women's Giving Fund members have open the email, which, you know, for all of us who send a lot of emails, that's pretty good. There's been a lot of talk on social media about it. We're over 300 votes now, but we'd like to get to over 400. I think that would be a very commendable goal.
Okay. So when are you going to have the results?
We announced the results on July 2nd at an event up at Silver Lake Lodge. And so no one will know who the winner is until that moment. It'll be a great celebration, and we hope all of our members will come. They also have received an invitation to that.
Okay. The Price Waterhouse envelope, huh? So, Lauren, you're also busy with the mentoring program. How's that going?
The mentoring program has been fantastic. We were so lucky to get a grant from Vail Epic Promise to start this program. And we've also been able to address some really important needs in Park City, especially in the school system. Really amazingly, we have been so embraced by the school system. Amber Connolly has really set the tone and allowed us to go into the schools and take the passion and the experience of so many of our members and start a mentoring program where we are either building on existing programs or starting some of our own programs. We've been able to go into Ecker Hill and start a program that we called Power Lunch. And during the 6th and 7th grade girls' lunches, we bring in amazing speakers that are members of the Women's Giving Fund. And Leslie, we'd love to have you come and speak at some point. And love that you're wearing your pendant. We had people like Nan Worrell come and speak about, you know, loving what you see and building self-esteem. We had Randy Jo Torrell give them some lessons on stress relief. Anne Bloomquist talked about making healthy eating choices. Diane Kushner came and did an amazing talk on finding your passion at all stages of your life. We have members that are working at Holy Cross Ministries. We have members that are working with Running with the Girls. We have an amazing member, Melly Owens, that went 4 days a week for a couple months to help train the girls at Ecker Hill to do a 5K run that they just completed, and they all completed it. So it's been an amazing program, and I would love to have more women involved. We touched hundreds of girls in the last few months since it started, and I'm hoping that we can get those numbers up even higher. But again, I want to thank Vail Epic Promise for making this all possible.
So they just need to contact you then if they're interested in helping out, or is
yes,
there something
that would
on the website
be great.
People can sign up? Or
Best just to contact me, and they can do that by calling the main number at Park City Community Foundation office or at mentoring@parkcitycommunityfoundation.org.
Okay. Anything else we need to mention?
Yeah, I just want to encourage everyone to join us for celebrating our commitment July 2nd up at Silver Lake Lodge. I want to thank Deer Valley, Silver Star Ski and Sport, and J.P. Morgan Jace for sponsoring that event. It's going to be a fantastic community celebration. This really took the efforts of all 1,200 women and girls, and we're just so proud at the Community Foundation to be a part of the good work of this community.
Okay. Katie, Lauren, and Kristen, thanks for coming in.
Thanks, Leslie.
It's 8:44. This is the KPCW Local News Hour. I'm Leslie Thatcher. Well, it's summertime, and the Park City Museum bringing back its walking tours of Main Street. In the studio with details, Museum Director Sandra Morrison. Good morning.
Good morning, Leslie.
So when did the tours start?
So they started on Monday, and of course, we've had beautiful weather. So we do them every day, Monday through Saturday, at 2 o'clock in the afternoon, but do come a few minutes early so you can get your ticket and everybody can get organized. The cost is $5 a person, and we also offer a combination ticket where you get the walking tour and the museum. So if you want to come early and see the museum and then go on the walking tour or vice versa, that is $12. And museum members can also go on the walking tour for free. But do come up early so we know to include you in the tour.
Okay. So where do people go? Just they stay on
Main Street? We start at the museum, and we make it easy. We all climb on the trolley and ride it to the top of Main Street. So then it's downhill all the way, and we try and stick in the shade, you know, when the weather's lovely and warm like this.
Yeah. All right. So who are your tours
so
guides?
Our tour guides are all volunteers at the museum, very dedicated. We have some volunteers that have been doing it for the last 5 years and have done a lot of research on their own, as well as the research that the staff has done on all the historic buildings. So, and each tour is different. Some of our volunteers have mining backgrounds. Yesterday, Donovan was giving the tour, and he is a retired mining engineer. So, of course, you hear more of a mining history, mining technical expertise, and then we have other people that are more interested in the architecture, and of course just fabulous stories about all the people that were involved in creating this town that we know today.
Yeah, so about how many stops do you make?
Just depending on, you know, which buildings we're talking about, what stories, but it does take about an hour and 15 minutes.
Okay.
And can be longer depending on how many questions people have.
Sure. So they'll continue until when?
And so we'll be doing those until September 5th, so just after Miner's Day.
All right. You also have Corey Jensen from the State Historic Preservation Office coming by next week to give a lecture.
Right. So in conjunction with the walking tours, Corey Jensen's lecture will be about Utah's 19th century architecture types. And so he's going to talk about just the defining characteristics of the vernacular house types in Utah. And of course, those are pretty much represented in Park City. We have all the different major house forms here with some Park City twists, of course.
So when and where is that
going to
be?
And so that's on June 24th. So that's Wednesday, and it starts at 5:30. He'll talk for probably an hour till 6:30, and then we'll have half an hour for questions as well.
Okay, I'm guessing he'll have, a slideshow with examples?
Yes.
Of local buildings?
Local, yeah. And, you know, and of course, you know, across the Utah, there's a lot more elaborate examples as well. So we'll have examples of all of that. And then the last thing I wanted to mention is today is Locals Free Day at the Park City Museum, sponsored by the Park City Rotary Club. So thank you very much to them. And so if you haven't been to the museum or you want to come back, we do have our circus exhibit on right now. We're open till 7 o'clock tonight, so come on by. It's free.
All right, Sandra, hey, thanks for coming in. Well, the One Book, One Community selection has been chosen for this summer. In the studio with details, Sarah Hutchinson from Park City Education Foundation, as well as Kirsten Nilsson from Summit County Library. Good morning to both of you.
Good morning.
Good morning.
So, let me see. I think it's the libraries and the bookstores that get together along with the high school to determine what the One Book's going to be?
Yes, it's this is a program funded by the Park City Education Foundation, and it's our fifth year of author in residence. And the high school students read the book over the summer, and then we invite the author. And this year it's Boys in the Boat is the book, and Daniel James Brown is the author, and he's coming to Park City. And we're partnering with the libraries and Dolly's to cross-reference and have everyone in the community read the book, and they are hosting their One Book, One Community.
Okay, so is it always the same book?
No. So generally, the One Book, One Community, we choose a different book than the students at the school. For instance, last year we did Second Sons, and we had Jeff Tabin come and speak. But every now and then we like to partner with the Ed Foundation, because I love the idea, well, all of us love the idea of parents and students and grandparents and everyone reading the same book, and this is actually the perfect choice for that.
All right, so tell me a little bit about the book.
Well, the book, as Sarah said, is The Boys in the Boat. It was actually a year ago, it was the number one New York Times bestseller, and it's the story of the 1936 U.S. Olympic men's eight-oar rowing team and how they came from working class boys in the Northwest and sort of triumphed over privilege and ended up winning in Berlin, which was, of course, Hitler's Nazi Olympics. And it's just a triumphant, inspirational story.
Okay, you mentioned the author, Daniel James Brown. He is coming in for the author in residence. When's that going to be?
Yes, he's coming in September 15th and 16th. He works with all the students at the high school, so he'll be in the classroom with them. And then the Park City Education Foundation hosts a community event, and that's at the new Park City Library, the Jim Santee Auditorium, at 7 o'clock p.m. on Tuesday, September 15th. And he will be speaking, and then we open it up for Q&A, and he will also stick around for some book signing.
Which is just
incredibly exciting to be able to have him. I actually met him last year at the American Library Association National Conference, and he's this humble, soft-spoken, just kind of a gentle person who was so amazed by the fame and the accolades that he got for this book. So it'll be interesting to hear from him.
Yeah, and I know that as part of like the one book series, you do other community conversations. Are those going to happen
as
well?
Yes, uh-huh. We're planning at the Summit County Library on August 18th, I'm sorry. We're planning to have a book discussion, and we welcome everyone, students, parents, like I said, grandparents, anybody who'd like to come. And we love to encourage those kinds of book discussions, and perhaps we can come up with some scintillating questions for the author for the next month. So,
yeah. I think the Ed Foundation, do you make the books available to all of the kids, or are they buying it on their own?
Generally, the students buy them on their own, and they can buy them at Dolly's or online or pretty much anywhere that carries the book. We do offer some books for the students that need financial assistance, and so we make sure that everyone has a copy of the book. And the program, it's great because we just appreciate our donors so much, and the montage is putting him up, Daniel James Brown, and he's bringing his wife, and so they're making a little bit of a Park City stay here, and it's the autumn time, and it will be beautiful. So I think he's really looking forward to it. We're looking forward to it. And hopefully the students are at home reading their books.
Yes, and the books are available at the libraries as well. We have multiple copies as well as audio versions. And I know that Dolly's offers a 10% discount to Park City High School students. So
get it there, yeah. And I was going to say that you kind of tend to buy more books than you might need. We used to kind of just leave them around in different places. Is that happening again?
I'm not sure about that. I'll look into it.
Okay, anything else, Sarah, Kirsten?
No, thank you very much to everyone that's going to participate.
Yeah, we're very excited.
Okay. Hey, thanks for coming in.
Thank you.
Sarah Hutchinson and Kirsten Nilsson.